Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, here we go. A little Baltimore Ravens talk. You know something about this team, Chris King.
Just a little bit.
All season long, we wondered who would finally hand the Patriots their first loss. Turned out to be the Ravens. A big reason how that happened was quarterback Lamar Jackson. Baltimore's first-round pick last year, accounting for three touchdowns in a win over New England Sunday night, prompting his teammate, All-Pro safety Earl Thomas, to say, quote, "This man is the MVP." Nick, why do you think so many people missed on Lamar Jackson?
This is a complex question. And
well, let's figure out, first, to say why they missed. They missed because of how many great quarterbacks we thought were great quarterbacks went before him. He was the last quarterback taken in the first round.
Yeah, well, the last quarterback taken, despite having the best collegiate resume other than Baker. And he and Baker, you could have put head to head. They both won a Heisman. They both were prolific passers. And I say that intentionally. Lamar was a prolific passer in college, not just runner. Now, obviously, he was a spectacular runner, but he wasn't Mike Vick the year that he was in the Heisman discussion, where he was almost exclusively a runner. He could do it all. And so, why did they miss on Lamar? Well, I don't know. Why did Locker and Gabbard and Ponder go ahead of Cap? And I know Cap is a dirty word these days, but he was a great quarterback for a period of time in this league. Why did Osweiler and Whedon and Tannehill go over Russell Wilson? Why did Blake Bortles go over all the quarterbacks he went ahead of? Why did Mitch Trubisky go ahead of Deshaun Watson? And the answer to that question, why did Josh Allen and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold go ahead of Lamar Jackson? And the answer is a lot of things. One is, coaches are more comfortable sticking with their style than diversifying what they do. I don't know if Baltimore trades up to get him if they don't have Greg Roman there, the man who built the offense around Colin Kaepernick when Cap was so successful. I think additionally, there is a prototype quarterback that has to do with height, that has to do with arm talent, that occasionally for some has to do with race. And Lamar obviously doesn't check any of those boxes. And there was one other thing that happened in the lead up with the discussion about Lamar. This is why when I say it's nuanced, people would talk about his inability to effectively communicate. And I would wonder, to whom is he supposed to communicate? Because I don't think anyone has ever had a hard time understanding Lamar Jackson in the huddle. But that doesn't mean he's a great interview. That doesn't mean that when he's sitting down with executives, he can communicate coming out of Louisville as effectively as Daniel Jones could this year coming out of North Carolina, maybe in more comfortable situations for Daniel than Lamar, given his, not, I don't want to even say upbringing, but just given who he has talked to and the circumstances in which he's been in his whole life.
Yep.
So all those reasons to me made it to where he was considered the risky pick as opposed to put on the tape. You think that guy can make plays in the NFL? Because I do. And all those things worked against him, which is why the Ravens were able to steal him with the 32nd pick of the draft.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the presentation of Lamar Jackson. He's not going to be the guy that necessarily fits into the blue blazer crowd, right? But Lamar Jackson is a guy that you can feel comfortable representing your organization. I go back to 2018 when he took over as a starter after their first nine games. They were 4-5. And when the media asked Lamar Jackson, "How does it feel now that this is your team?" He said, "It's not just my team, it's our team." But you can see when he has that kind of attitude, that endears him to his teammates, and you can see that they love him. And in the way that he plays on the field, it's a style that's not for everybody. Not every coach shares the same philosophy that John Harbaugh has. There was that belief that was out there that you can't win championships with a quarterback that's an athlete that takes off and runs. But what people have to understand is Lamar Jackson wants to be a pocket passer. There's a difference between an athlete playing a quarterback versus a quarterback that happens to be an athlete. Lamar Jackson is clearly the latter, and when you look at his numbers this year, he's a lot more effective when he's playing from the pocket than he is when he's throwing outside of the pocket. And I think he has 5 times the attempts throwing the football in the pocket than he does outside of the pocket. So I think that there are some misconceptions about who Lamar Jackson is and the kind of game that he wants to play.
And there's something to be said for how he spent his offseason. He wants to be a pocket passer. He spent this whole offseason really working on throwing the ball. He came flat out and said, I hate running. I don't want to run. He's poised. He's got humility as a young player. John Harbaugh said, I don't see him as young. He's wise beyond his years. But if I could play devil's advocate for a second, I think part of the reason he did drop is because he was basically playing two positions in college. And I think a lot of NFL teams were perhaps a little, apprehensive about bringing someone in who wasn't just a pure quarterback, even if he was a better runner in college than he was a thrower.
Right. The only issue I have with that is, if we want to say he played two positions, he played them both at an A-plus level. Every year in this league, we have quarterbacks who don't even play their one position quarterback at a B-minus level that somehow find themselves as lock top 10 picks. I mean, the same draft as Lamar Jackson. Let's just remove running from the equation entirely. Let's show the number six pick of the draft compared to Lamar and what they did their last 2 years of college. That's Josh Allen, that's Lamar. Josh is playing at a small school in a nonsense conference. And Lamar has him crushed in everything. None of that. I mean, you do see the rushing yards there, but you can X that out. All the other passing numbers, he has him killed. Why is Josh Allen the safer pick? Because he's 6'5", because he has a rocket arm. And by the way, Josh Allen's best attributes are his legs right now as well, but we don't assign that to him. The same Mitch Trubisky, there was no argument for Mitch Trubisky to go ahead of Deshaun Watson. There was none. But the Bears so desperately needed Trubisky, I'm not even including Mahomes, because I think that would be revisionist history.
Yeah, that's an outlier.
I didn't see Mahomes coming. I don't think a lot of people saw Mahomes coming. But Deshaun, we saw him. We saw what he
lighted
did
up
in college football against the best competition. Why was Trubisky considered the safer pick? Because it is almost as if you get downgraded if you can do things with your legs. And there is the element of prototype quarterback, face of the franchise, and what do those things actually mean, and what are we actually saying? I don't think Kyler would have gone number one if Baker hadn't had the success he had.
Yeah.
I think Baker, from that system, that size, all of a sudden broke some boundaries for Kyler. And I don't know if Lamar would have been a first-round pick if not for the success Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick had had. So hopefully Lamar opened some doors for other guys. But ultimately, guys, I think teams overthought it. I think they saw Lamar Jackson, and instead of looking for reasons he could do it, they were looking for reasons he couldn't. And with Josh Allen and others, it was, well, let's make the case as to why he can, rather than put on the tape and see why he can't.
Well, I think there's something to what you're talking about with quarterbacks that have had recent success coming out of spread systems in college. Bill Parcells, who was the coach that drafted me when I came into the league for the Dallas Cowboys, he told me that he wasn't draft players that don't remind him of somebody that he's had success with.
Yep.
And a lot of NFL coaches abide by that rule. And there aren't a lot of quarterbacks that have looked like Lamar Jackson in the last 25 years in the NFL. So, I mean, it is going out on a limb to take a chance on a guy like Lamar Jackson that happens to be the athlete that he is, because the tendency for young quarterbacks while they're learning is to trust their legs more than they trust their arm. And then also the questions for Lamar Jackson coming out of college is, how accurate is he? I mean, in college, you're talking about throwing in the windows where guys have 5 yards of separation. Yep. If you got a yard of separation in the NFL, that's considered open. Can Lamar Jackson routinely make those throws? Now, we didn't see him make those throws on a consistent basis in his rookie year, but he did make, he's starting to make those throws now going into his second year. So I think there's something to be said for the kid's motivation in order to improve his game and hone his craft. But that's only something that you learn when you sit down with the kid in the interview room. The only problem is a lot of talent evaluators in the NFL weren't willing to give him that opportunity.
Accuracy, strength, confidence, and he's won at every level, and he's continued to do it now for the Baltimore Ravens. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, the Lakers are now sitting atop the Western Conference. Great news for Chris Canty, who we found out is a Laker fan, even though he's not from California. LeBron James is a big reason why, posting triple-doubles in back-to-back games and leading the NBA in assists. After Friday night's game, LeBron hopped on the gram, posted this: "My drive and passion will outweigh your hate. Nothing you can do to stop me. You only help me. Hashtag revenge season. Hashtag the kid from Akron." He's big mad, Nick. Big mad. Yeah. What? Nick, can re-energize LeBron lead the Lakers to an NBA title?
Yeah, he can. Looks like he will. Looks, you know what year 17 LeBron looks like? Year 14 LeBron. Mm. Or year 11 LeBron. Or year 7 LeBron. Or basically the LeBron James we've gotten every single year after his rookie season.
Yeah.
Rookie season comes in, he's a 21-5-5 guy. And since then, despite oddly never actually having a 27-7-7 game in his whole career, he's given you 27-7-7 year in, year out. This year, he's doing it a little differently. One less point, one more rebound, four more assists, 26-8-11. He's playing out of position, but that out of position is allowing him to lead the NBA in assists by a wide margin. He right now is, if you care about the nerdy defensive stats, he's a top three defensive player in the league so far this year. And it turns out, for the first time in a decade, not having a 100-game season, we saw no teams had gone to four straight finals until recently when the Heat did it, the Cavs did it, the Warriors did it, obviously. The Warriors amazingly went to five straight, and now the entire team is injured. Hmm. Everyone that's a part of it
is dealing. There's no one left right now playing.
Because bodies are not built to play five consecutive 100-game seasons. LeBron played eight consecutive, and then his groin gave out on him, and last year was a lost season. And then he got some rest, got some rejuvenation, spent some time, it would appear, on a very nice boat in the south of France. And he came back and reminded everybody, hey, that best player in the world title, it still goes through me. And with him playing like this, Canty, and Anthony Davis being Anthony Davis, and the Lakers actually having a living, breathing NBA head coach, I don't know if Frank Vogel's great, but he sure as hell ain't Luke Walton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the best team in the NBA right now.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you talked about LeBron James and that injury that he had last year. That was probably the best thing for his career, knowing that he's getting a little bit older. The fact that he was able to get some rest this past offseason, not having an extended playoff run, he can come back this year and be rejuvenated. But I go back to something that Nick noticed at the beginning of last season about LeBron's game. And he said LeBron didn't look as engaged defensively. It looks completely different this season in terms of his engagement on the defensive end. All you got to do is go back to that Mavs game on Friday and look at how he played in the final minutes of that game in the fourth quarter and in overtime. He took over that game, but it was started with his defense. The fact that he set the tone for that team and that they've embraced defense as being the identity for them, I think that's going to bode well for them, because at the end of it, I think it will be the Lakers and the Clippers. We know the Clippers can play lockdown defense, but I think that this LeBron James, if we get this version of him the entire season, especially on the defensive end, I think this Lakers team is right there. And ultimately, when you look at the star power, I trust LeBron James and Anthony Davis a little bit more than I trust Kawhi Leonard and Paul George.
But Nick, this is almost like LeBron, I don't want to say 2.0, it's like 7.0, if you will. He leads the league in assists, so he's obviously just altered his game a little bit. Yep. He's playing defense for the first time in a long time, and he's actually enjoying playing with the people around him. Just talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think the defense point, the team right now, they're the number one defense in basketball. They have the number one defensive rating. They're number one in opponent field goal percentage. They're second in opponent threes, and so and that's where Vogel gets credit, because that is what he was known for in Indiana. Didn't work out for him in Orlando, but that's where Vogel gets credit, and it helps when you have Anthony Davis on the inside and LeBron out on the perimeter. But where LeBron made a point after the game, I think it was Friday night against the Mavs, where he was asked about his defense, and he said, here's what's never happened to me my whole career. No one's ever singled me out defensively, meaning they don't hunt him the way Steph would get hunted. Like, oh, let me get LeBron on a switch. Where his on-ball defense has always been exceptional. Where it lagged last year and where it lagged in the regular season the last few years with the Cavs was his off-ball defense was lackadaisical, was at times he almost seemed like he wasn't paying full attention on the court, which is very not like what we're used to LeBron first decade of his career. This year, I think to set the tone for the team, it has been the opposite. His off-ball defense has been exceptional. He's always making the right switch. He's always getting to the right place. The offense, he will always be an A-plus offensive player, because even right now when his shot's not falling, he's the best passer in basketball, and he's got Anthony Davis as a cheat code to dump the ball down to. So the Lakers right now have a league average offense. That'll get better. If they can be a top five defense, and right now they're the number one defense, they will not only be the best team in basketball, they will clearly be the best team in basketball, because to your point, that's where the Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge.
Yes.
The Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge defensively, expecting the Lakers would have an edge offensively. Up to this point in the season, that has not been the case.
No, it hasn't been the case, and LeBron James told us coming into this season, a lot of people have been playing with the throne.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be back with a vengeance. Guess what? He's back.
I like it. He's still the best player in the league. It's only been 14 straight years.
All right, let's move on back to some football. Oh, to be a fly on the wall of any room at Gillette Stadium yesterday, as the Patriots had to first sit down and start watching film from their terrible loss to the Ravens. How terrible? Well, before they knew it, they were trailing 17-0. Brady knows that his team has a lot of room for improvement, especially on the offensive side, where they're ranked 15th in yards per game. All right, Chris Canty, let me ask you this, and I'm not gonna be dramatic when I ask you, but after what you saw on Sunday night, after what you've been seeing leading up to Sunday night, should the Patriots still be the favorites in the AFC?
Yeah, they should be the favorites. They've gone to 8 straight AFC championship games, so until otherwise notice, I'm going to bet on Tom Brady and Bill Belichick being able to find a way, especially knowing that they have a pretty good defense. Now, I do believe that defense ran into a bad matchup in the Baltimore Ravens, but by and large, I think that defense is closer to what we've seen in the first 8 games of the season as opposed to what we saw on Sunday night. Now, what Brady's talking about with their approach, he's absolutely right. They do have things that they have to work on, and they don't count their wins before they go out there and play the game. And he actually went on to say in that interview that when you win, everything is great, but that's not really the case. That's what everybody outside of the organization is saying, just because winning is the ultimate deodorant. But Tom Brady and that group, they know that when they win, there are still things that they have to work on. There are still things that they need to improve. And that's from their head coach, Bill Belichick, who constantly preaches improvement to his team. Everybody do their job. We heard Bill Belichick after the game talk about, yeah, we didn't do enough to deserve an opportunity to win that football game. This is a team that's always going to be focused on improvement. And if you focus on the process rather than the result, at the end of it, you're going to like where you end up.
With respect, I agree with the end of that. I totally disagree with the beginning that they should still be the favorite because of what they've done over the last decade. What they've done this season is right now they look like the third best team in the conference. And they are great at dominating inferior competition. Great. No team is better over the last 20 years at not beating itself, at letting the other team beat themselves before you even have to do anything. All of it. But in the playoffs, you got to beat real teams. And Baltimore this year has beaten Seattle, and New England. Kansas City this year has beaten Baltimore and beaten Minnesota, with their backup quarterback. New England's best win is Buffalo. New England, I need to see them beat the type of teams they are going to have to beat to make it to their fourth straight Super Bowl in order to believe it. And right now, we know they don't have faith in their special teams. They don't have faith in their special teams coverage, but by special teams, let me rephrase it. They don't have faith in their kicker. They have had 25 uninterrupted years of Hall of Fame kickers. Vinatieri to Gostkowski, with I think a dozen games missed in total over that quarter century. Now they're on their third kicker this year. They're on, is it Nick Folk now? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he'll make it to the end of the year. Hell, if Vinatieri gets cut by the Colts, maybe they'll bring his senior citizen self back. Brady's right about their offense. The numbers are right. The every number other than points per game, which is inflated because of the defense, says this is an average offense. And the eye test says this is an average offense. But the most concerning thing to me, Canny, from the Ravens game is that defense that I have been saying, the numbers have been saying, was historically great through eight games, was getting gashed repeatedly. And that, to me, does raise some questions. How much of the defense was a product of playing a bunch of learning, if not incompetent, NFL quarterbacks? So if Baltimore were to play them on a neutral field, I would favor Baltimore. If Kansas City, especially now that Chris Jones is back and the defense looks different, if they have a healthy Patrick Mahomes and they were to play them on a neutral field, I would favor Kansas City. The Patriots obviously can get there, but to me, they're not the favorites in the AFC anymore.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not giving the Patriots some lifetime achievement award based on what they've accomplished. I'm just saying, based on the history, I know the mentality and how they're going to approach the season, particularly the second half of the season. Now, last year at the end of the season, they had a couple of bad losses. They lost on the road to Miami. They lost to Pittsburgh in a game where they only scored 10 points. Mm-hmm. And everybody wanted to leave the Patriots for dead and said that offense couldn't figure it out. And guess what happened? Bill Belichick and Tom Brady figured it out. They morphed into an offense that had two backs in the backfield, ran a lot of lead plays. They led with the ground game, and that ended up propelling them to a championship. I'm looking at this from the standpoint of Bill Belichick is still trying to figure out what his offense does well, what they don't do well, and then try to major in the things that his team is strong at. They still don't have an identity on that side of the ball. But what has saved them thus far this season has been the defense and the level that they've played at. Now, every offense is not going to have what the Baltimore Ravens offense has in Lamar Jackson. So that's to their benefit. The Patriots still have the number one seed in the AFC. All right, so they still have an opportunity. They still play in the AFC East.
Yes.
So there's very little competition. I mean, you see Buffalo, they'll probably be a wild card team, but we don't think Buffalo is going to threaten for the division. So this Patriots team still has time to figure it out. And then, oh, by the way, we'll see what happens as they continue to get healthier.
And I want to make this clear. I still think they'll be the one seed.
Okay.
I think even if they lose 3 out of 5 of this five-game stretch, as I said last week, I think they will. I don't think anyone gets to better than 13 wins in the AFC. And so I still think they're the one seed. I think they can be had at Gillette this year. I think this is the worst Pats offense we've seen since the Matt Castle year, since the year Tom Brady was not the quarterback.
Chris Canny, who's more important to the Cowboys' success, Zeke or Dak Prescott?
I would usually lean toward the best player or the better player in this instance, but I got to go with Dak Prescott because he's the quarterback. He touches the ball on every single offensive snap, so thereby I think he can have the most impact in terms of their team competing and trying to win a title, which is the ultimate goal. But in looking at what the Dallas Cowboys did last night offensively, I don't think you should have any concern about the running game. I mean, the running game was dominant. I mean, I was watching Ezekiel Elliott get 2-3 yards past the line of scrimmage before first contact. If that happens, then that means that Zeke is getting up on your safety or up on a defensive back and one-on-one in open space. Good luck trying to consistently tackle that guy.
Tell me if you agree. When that offensive line's healthy, they have the best running attack in football.
No question about it. I don't think you can even debate that. When that offensive line is healthy, that is the best running game in football. Now, it's a win because we're talking about a lot of those guys being on the back nine in terms of where they're at in their careers. But they're still really, really good. The only question is, can the quarterback come to the party consistently? And based on what we saw for the first half from Dak Prescott, I mean, it was ugly. It was ugly, Jenna. There was no other way to frame it. I mean, until the black cat crossed the field, I mean, it was all bad for Dak Prescott. I mean, the first play of the game, he throws the ball to Antoine Bethea. Antoine Bethea don't play for the Cowboys, he plays for the Giants. So, I mean, it's a situation where there are some decisions that you cannot explain that Dak Prescott makes, and you see it way too often. So I'm just looking for this team to put it all together against a quality opponent. To this point in this season, they haven't done that.
Zeke's the most important player to the Cowboys being in the playoff picture. Dak is the most important player to them having any chance of success once in the postseason. If Zeke weren't there, this Cowboys offense would be a bottom 10 offense in football, to my eye. I don't think they're good enough in the passing game to overcome if they just had replacement level running back play, even with the outstanding offensive line. So Zeke can get you to the party, but who's going to take you home? It has to be Dak. So I agree with you. Like, the question mark for the Cowboys has, and the reason, it's not just because of the star on their helmet and their most discussed team. The reason we spend so much time talking about Dak is his level of play has as much of an impact on a team's ability to either win the Super Bowl or miss the playoffs outright as any player in the league. The Cowboys' defense is good and appears to only be getting better. You mentioned since Robert Quinn came back how much better the defensive line has been, and Michael Bennett, couple penalties notwithstanding, his impact was felt instantly. Tank Lawrence playing like he's finally over that off-season shoulder surgery. Byron Jones, after a rough very beginning to the season, has played a lot better. Yesterday, they didn't have Leighton Vander Esch. Didn't matter. Old man Sean Lee dusted off, played a few snaps. He didn't play great, but they have enough depth there along with Jalen Smith. We know what Zeke can be. We know what the offensive line can be when healthy. The wide receiving core is good, if not elite, but good with Cooper and Cobb. I don't care about Witten. It's about Dak. If Dak can play the best quarterbacks in football, not to a draw, but if he can give you 80% of what Breeze or Rodgers or Wilson are going to give you in a playoff game, then the Cowboys can beat those teams. By the way, that's what happened in the playoff game last year. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks had the handcuffs on Russell. He wasn't able to do that much. Dak played him close to a draw, and the rest of the Cowboys were flatly better than the rest of the Seahawks. That's the question for the Cowboys. So he's the most important guy. Zeke doesn't have to take a leap. Dak's the one that has to take a leap to get to the level we're talking
about. But you answered it before perfectly. We know the answer to Dak. We keep trying to change the question, but we know the answer, and the answer is it's because we don't know the answer. The fact that we keep asking who is Dak Prescott, now this far into his career, we all sort of know it. I mean, he hasn't been signed to his long contract yet, but he will, and he probably will always be that. But it's interesting that we've spent so much offseason, so much preseason talking about Zeke and Cabo and will he sign and what an integral part he is to this offense and how this offense will only succeed if he's back there. And he's back there, and we haven't really talked about him at all this season. He's quietly putting together Zeke-type numbers. Why do you think that is?
Well, he's doing what he always does. When Zeke plays the entire regular season, he's going to lead the league in rushing. That's who Ezekiel Elliott has been since he came into the league. But as far as the Dallas Cowboys are concerned, they paid Zeke $90 million for a reason. They paid him that money because they think they're right there in terms of being able to win a title. You don't give a running back $90 million in today's NFL if you don't think you're going to get some kind of return on that investment. You're talking about the position that probably has the shortest shelf life of any position in the league. So, yeah, the Dallas Cowboys believe they can get it done, but it all depends on what Dak Prescott is bringing to the table.
And they're about to pay
him,
too.
And to your point, Jenna, if you keep having to ask the question about whether or not you got a quarterback, then the answer is probably that you don't have a quarterback that's capable of competing at a championship level. But Dak Prescott is going to be the starting quarterback because you don't have any alternative. The hope for Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett is that Dak Prescott in year four can grow and be better than Dak Prescott has been in his first 3 years of his career. And it's not crazy to think that because he's getting more experience. He should be able to have more answers in terms of what defenses are trying to do to neutralize him. They're thinking that he's going to continue to improve as a player. The only question is that improvement going to come quick enough where the Dallas Cowboys can capitalize on the window that they have right now?
Dallas Cowboys are the Minnesota Vikings with better marketing. And they should be discussed the same. Good team, great defense, decent coach, excellent running back. Questions about
questions
the quarterback.
But the quarterback in Minnesota is a lot further along than Dak Prescott.
Okay, sure. His cement is dry, so to speak.
Yes.
Dak could still evolve.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.